Welcome to hour number three of today's Todd Feinberg Show. During our last hour every Saturday, we try to learn a little something about what's going on in the world. We call it our Middle East Hour, and we dig deep into issues surrounding this part of the world that's so important to us and our well-being, and we know so precious little about. So we try to bring people on who can teach us something, and I hope you don't mind. I hope you don't mind that we actually add facts into the conversation, because it gives us so much more power as American citizens to deal with these issues, to think about them, to discuss them, and to be able to advise our government regarding how to proceed. We're joined now by a guy we've had on before a couple times. Grant Smith is his name. He is the director of research for the Institute for Research, Middle East Policy, and he spends all of his waking moments, almost all of them, thinking about, writing about, researching, studying stuff going on in the Middle East. Grant, welcome once again to the Todd Feinberg Show.
Hi, Todd. It's great to be here again. Thanks very much for having me.
How's everything with you?
Pretty good. I have to admit, though, I do eat lunch once in a while. Not every single...
Well, wait a sec. When you're eating lunch, however, what are you thinking about, Grant?
Always thinking about policy, and in particular, you know, we try to focus on the policy formulation process in the U.S. So,
what does that mean?
Well, instead of looking at an event or a series of historical events in the region, we really like to look at the nitty-gritty, how is policy hammered out here in the U.S., who are the promoters, who are the actors, where's the money? And that can often be much more enlightening than simply saying, you know, this is why the U.S. has this policy.
So instead of talking about just the result,
right,
you dig down and find out how it came to be that this result was pursued, and whether this result was an intended result or an unintended one.
Yeah, we do.
Whether somebody's actually sitting there plotting this whole thing. And one of the cool things about doing what you do, I think, is because it isn't necessarily a large group of people or some powerful force that makes a certain policy come into effect. Sometimes it's a small group of people with an idea.
That's absolutely right.
So
who are eloquent and who promote it and who've been around a long time. It really is surprising how major decisions can suddenly be made in a room with relatively few people. And we are fascinated when we come across documents, particularly documents that are extremely important that really lay out policy formulation. You had a discussion earlier on your show talking a little bit about ascribing things to people, and it's such a treat when you can actually read what they say in their own words, and there is no debate about whether this was their policy goal or not.
And is this often the case? You're referring, I guess, to the discussion we had about Ariel Sharon
right,
earlier.
Right, right.
Do you often find that hidden or not so hidden is a clear path to policy that most people aren't aware has been left by its perpetrator?
Yeah, pretty much. There are really three key documents that we advise anybody who's interested in the topic to look at, because they're sort of that raw primary source. One of them is the National Security Strategy of the United States, which was published in 2002, authored by Paul Wolfowitz and his team. It's very, very clear about many things about U.S. Presence in the Middle East and in the Gulf region. And the other document, which is the Project for the New American Century document called Rebuilding America's Defenses, which had so many prominent U.S. policymakers contributing to that paper, and which is, again, very, very clear about what the policy mandate should be. So they're out there. They're not always paid attention to, though. Sometimes,
which is one of the ironies, because we pay more attention to politically made statements rather than the more nuts and bolts and maybe somewhat more nerdy documents that
exactly
that you're referring to.
The wonky documents, which are, you know, they're not that easy to read, and it's more fun to read an analysis, sort of an upbeat perspective.
Yes.
Than the document itself. So
let's talk about this clean break plan that you're
okay.
Here to talk to us about today. What is the clean break plan?
Okay. The clean break plan is a policy position paper that was put out by the Institute for Advanced Strategic and Political Studies. The authorship of the paper included Richard Perle, James Colbert, Douglas Feith, former Undersecretary for Defense, or current Undersecretary of Defense, David Wormser, who's Dick Cheney's Middle East advisor, Mayor of Wormser, some very prominent policymakers who put together a policy paper for Benjamin Netanyahu to advise him on what Israeli strategy should be as he took office. The date of the document is 1996. And the basic idea is whether working with the Israeli government or whether working on other projects, most of these people circulate in fairly broad circles, they put down some very solid and core policy beliefs in this document, which we think is very valuable to analyze and really look at from a broader range of perspectives.
All right, so give us a hint of what was revealed in this document 9 years ago that was advising the Prime Minister of Israel rather than advising anyone in the U.S.
Okay, well, basically, some of the core, there are about 34 policy initiatives in the document, but you can break them down into about five, summarizing them. One was to increase unconditional U.S. congressional support for Israel. The second was to shift into a peace-for-peace strategy rather than land-for-peace settlement with the Palestinians. Contain, destabilize, and roll back many of the challengers to Israel. Number four, economically reform Israel. And number five, rejuvenate Zionism. The policymakers crafting the paper spent a lot more time on the first issues and dealing with the Palestinians than they did necessarily about economic reform, which is something that, if you look at all of the policy initiatives, is probably the one which didn't occur as much as the others.
All right, but in the interest of time, let's focus in on those that would be particularly interesting to us, Grant.
Sure. Well, I think, you know, the most interesting thing about this policy paper are the tracking that U.S. policy has had and the alignment U.S. policy has had with this paper. If we look at big issues such as replacing the Saddam Hussein regime in Iraq, that was very clearly made as a policy initiative in this paper.
Well, but this was advice to the Prime Minister of Israel 9 years ago. What were they? Were they suggesting that he should get rid of Saddam?
They were suggesting that Israel transcend the situation and deal with the threat by having him removed and replaced with a Hashemite monarchy. The exact mechanism, you can infer from it that because they're so interested in sending messages to the U.S. Congress that it's not exactly clear whether Israel itself would do it or whether the U.S. would do it.
The intention of this paper then designed for Benjamin Netanyahu might have been to actually float ideas into the international community that could circle back and influence people in this country.
Exactly. Getting it done is pretty much the, you know, here's the objective. This is what we want to get done. But again, the advisors are circulating in Israeli circles, in U.S. circles, in international circles. So,
and these guys all talk to each other, presumably. Grant Smith was with us from Institute for Research Middle East Policy, and we're talking about the Clean Break Plan, I think. Have we gotten to the Clean Break Plan?
Yeah, we're talking about the Clean Break Plan. The other
document, is that what this whole document is called that was given to Netanyahu by the neocons from this country?
Yeah, the exact document is called the Clean Break, a new strategy for securing the realm being Israel in this case.
All right, but let's talk about this one idea of getting rid of Saddam, which we've heard frequently that Bush had this plan in his head long before September 11th and was just following through on a preconceived notion that was made possible by the tragedy of September 11th. And I wonder how we know what was in his head as opposed to the fact that this plan and the desire to implement it existed, and it happened to be there to grab onto when there was the opportunity existed without it having been in Bush's head in advance.
Yeah, I think that's where we get into the problem of ascribing. I mean,
yes.
There's been a lot of documents coming to light, particularly recently, with the British intelligence discussion saying that that intelligence is being shaped around policy rather than in reverse. That makes a case for that. But then, you know, we would be getting into that dangerous water of ascribing something.
Well, isn't it true, Grant, that invasion of any country on the planet it already has a plan in place in this country?
That's true.
And that we would be irresponsible if we didn't have those plans already written.
Yes, we had discussions recently with a Pentagon planner who made exactly that case. We were talking about some invasion plans to secure various oil-producing regions, and they said, well, of course we do this. So that's exactly true.
So the models have to be in place, and that's where it's difficult to know. For example, if you're trying to ascribe some kind of motive to Bush in advance of September 11th, it's hard to know whether he'd ever heard of Saddam Hussein. I guess he would have known that. Hang on. Grant Smith with us on the Todd Feinberg Show. More coming up. This is the Saturday edition of the Todd Feinberg Show, the live weekly radio program that happens on weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, all across America. We're talking to Grant Smith, and he's describing the Clean Break plan to us, a plan submitted by neocons in this country to Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, 9 years ago, which contained the desire and the stated goal and the suggestion to Netanyahu that Saddam Hussein should be removed from power in Iraq. So, Grant, time is running short. Let's bring this around to something people can grab a hold to.
Sure. First of all, I'd like to mention that I'm drawing a lot of this from analysis from a new book that we've put out called Neocon Middle East Policy, The Clean Break Plan Damage Assessment, because it is the view of most of the analysts that worked on this book that this is an extremely damaging set of policies. To bring it around a little bit, they're damaging because they really are out of alignment with traditional U.S. values that could be communicated through our policy, and it proposes a new global confrontation, particularly with Islamic groups, that we think oversimplifies a very complex situation and redefines it as an old Cold War type of scenario, which we don't find very useful. And it's very frank, I think surprisingly frank, in discussing...
Are you talking about the book or the Clean Break
plan? About the Clean Break plan, okay. And the analysis that's in our book. It proposes leveraging Israeli positions and various initiatives in Congress that may or may not be in the best interest of the U.S. And because of its frankness, we really do recommend that people read the original document, which is contained in the book, but can also be found on the Internet simply typing a clean break.
Give us a handle on it. I'm sorry, finish with the website?
Yeah, if you wanted to see the original document, the policy position paper,
yep.
And not the analysis, simply go to Google and type a clean break, and it'll be the first link that you see.
All right, good work on that. So give us something tangible that we can take from this so we have a handle on what the book's really driving at.
Well, the book's really driving at something that came up in your conversation with Ellen Ratner. We've got to have people working on policy issues who are ideal, who have a background that's not compromised, that are not working with different governments in terms of being compromised by that. If we're going to have policy advisors working on key U.S. policies, they should have a demonstrated experience, but they shouldn't be so closely identified with foreign governments in this case, and they shouldn't be so closely identified with framing policy and then selling it to the U.S. as though it were U.S. policy.
So what are you referring to specifically?
The recommendations, we would recommend that, prominent people.
No, but what happened? Were there people who worked for other governments, you're saying, helping with this policy in the U.S.?
Well, Douglas Feith, our Undersecretary of Defense, who is very influential in channeling intelligence about Iraq, supporting the WMD position, he's one of the authors of this paper. And it's already led many Americans to question what policy he was pursuing, whether it was really in the interests of the U.S. and whether he was simply channeling bogus intelligence to further policy positions he's always had.
But isn't anybody who's involved in U.S. policy internationally in some way a part of the international community?
Sure, but it doesn't mean that they've done consulting work for the prime minister of a key country that's got to be You know, it's got to be influenced by the U.S. It doesn't mean...
So is your concern that he might actually be doing the bidding of the country he's doing the consulting for when he's advising the U.S.?
No, it's more a concern that he no longer distinguishes, and he's incapable of distinguishing between U.S. interests and the interests of another country. And that's not good, because clearly there are different sets of issues. And I've been surprised in meeting various diplomats. Not all of them front-run U.S. policy. They're not out there brokering deals and operating in the international environment ahead of U.S. policy or even competing with it in some cases. And unfortunately, there are some who do that and some who don't. I mean, we can mention both on Democrats and Republicans who've been caught up doing things that are decidedly against U.S. interests, but there never seems to be any consequence for that. And we make a very strong statement saying, enough is enough. Back quite a number of years ago, there was a law called the Logan Act, which was established precisely...
I'm sorry, we're out of time.
Okay.
So I can't even let you go there, but let's just tell people where to get the book again. It's called what?
It's called Neocon Middle East Policy. If you simply type neocons in Google, you'll see any number of links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble.